The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin. It's nice when you see a film where there's an effect and the person goes that extra mile to make it, just to soup up a little thing that some people may not notice. And you're taking that into consideration. Like, who's going to notice this? Well, it doesn't mean...
I think you do it so they don't notice it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want them to say... You don't want them to say, that's fake. That's a
right.
fake guy.
Yeah.
A red alert. Hey, this is Big J. And in just a moment, I will be showing you Stargate SG-13, a Stargate fan film from the Federation Files. Afterwards... Please join our critical, not cynical review for our discussions and reaction to the film. Without further ado, here is Stargate SG-13.
So, can anyone tell me why it's called a Stargate? It doesn't go to other stars, it goes to other planets.
So what would you call it? Planet Gate?
Be more accurate. So you want that patch on your shoulder to say PG-13? Cover!
Get out of here, Cap!
Are you kidding? Go, that's an order!
No, sir, I got this. You're right behind me.
Where's Hawk?
Damn it! I ordered them to evacuate.
He didn't come through ahead of you.
No, you know Hawk. He loves to be the last one through. Guess he didn't make it this time. Report.
I do not detect any hostiles, sir.
This doesn't look like the Gamma site, Lieutenant.
It's not.
I thought I dialed the Gamma site. I was rushed. Okay, so I misdialed. We'll just dial from here, no big deal.
I have more bad news.
Let's have it, Ryan.
I can't find a DHD.
Okay, let's grab the gear, find a place to make camp. Okay, we have minimal supplies. We need to find food, water, anything that can help us get home or send out a signal. There's plenty of deadfall around here, so I'll stay here, clear the area, and gather wood. You two find a source of water. And it goes without saying, but if you find anything edible, it's much appreciated.
Yes, sir.
Mike to Morris.
Go ahead.
Sir, I found a stream. Over.
How's it look?
Clear, cool. Tastes great.
Careful, Mike. I know we don't have a test kit, so let's boil it first. Good job. Out.
To Mike.
Go ahead, Em.
Where are you?
I'm at Bear Camp. I found a water source and I was going to refill the canteens.
Why?
I have something to show you. I'll meet you back at camp. Ryan out. So I found what looked like a skeleton, and I wanted your opinions on it.
A skeleton of what?
It looked human, but I didn't get too close.
Well, you have always been a bit squeamish. Okay, settle down. If this turns out to be human, it could be good news for us. Let's go.
What the hell is that?
Look like it's a goblin symbiote.
You think this is the body of a Jeffa?
No, the symbiont is way too big. That gold was mature, so this may have been a system lord.
Yeah, but it was a minor god at best. This isn't very impressive.
This symbiote has a large mandible and huge teeth.
That just means it's very old. Remember, the ancient Gauld were carnivorous.
I know, but this body couldn't have been dead more than 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, we better be on our guard.
Agreed. However, without a DHD, I don't think this is an active Gauld planet.
Me neither. More like a battlefield than the stronghold.
I just wonder who could have defeated this Gauld.
That's a good question.
Well, there's plenty of animal life here.
I didn't see anything.
Me neither.
I didn't either. I'm just saying there's plenty of signs.
Well, let's not get paranoid. If there was a Jaffa in the area, we'd be dead by now. Let's get back to camp.
I'm getting tired of you giving orders all the time.
I'm the ranking officer.
Don't you get it? We aren't ever leaving here. We are no longer in the service.
And whose fault is that?
What, are you saying this is my fault?
You dialed the gate.
Thank you.
Morris. Captain Morrison, reply. Urgent, Morris, reply.
It's been 8 months since we gated here. I have had the opportunity to explore several miles, both west and north. I have found a few abandoned homesteads from which I have scavenged some tools, dishes, and other artifacts. I was even able to procure some clothing to supplement my wardrobe. Jackson would be in heaven here, but it sure feels more like hell. Sustaining myself has not been difficult. There is an abundance of wildlife which are easy prey. Spearfishing has been the most efficient. There is a local reptile which is very tasty. I have named them razorbacks because they look like Komodo dragons with spikes along their spine. They can get pretty big and are aggressive, so I only hunt the juveniles. There are also small birds present, but curiously, as much as this planet mimics Earth, I have not seen any signs of mammals. My days are like I imagined the early pioneers lived, gathering firewood, hunting, foraging, exploring, and hoping for that day when the gate activates and I can go home.
General Hammond to the CNC. General Hammond to the CNC. General Hammond to the CNC.
Now what?
I must say, I am pleasantly surprised to see you. Our surveillance indicates that there is no DHD present at your location. Fortunately, there is a Tok'ra ship nearby, and they have agreed to retrieve you. They will be in orbit of your planet in 36 hours. Data from our drone indicates that there is a pyramid 6 miles due east of the gate. The Tok'ra will meet you there. So pack your bags and get there ASAP. Welcome back. Hammond out.
You heard the general. Pack your bags. We're going home.
I'm sorry to say, General. All members of SG-13 have been lost.
Lieutenant Ryan, SG-13.
I've been tasked to retrieve you and your team. Where is your team?
I regret to inform you. Other than myself, the rest of SG-13 was lost.
Do you know what that is?
There are replicators on this planet. At least I think they're replicators. They don't look like replicators. There are hostile mechanical entities on this planet. We need to leave.
Welcome back. This is Critical Not Cynical. I am Big J along with Frank and V-Man. We've got a couple special guests with us tonight. We've got Glenn Wolf and we've got Caitlin Bailey, who were in this film, Stargate SG-13. This is a little different that we're doing for you today. We're going to be talking about a non-Star Trek film. So for anyone that's waiting for the Star Trek part, that's not it. We're taking a little bit of a departure here to do something different. So, Glenn, you just sent me a message a little bit ago about an award that you got for this fan film. Can we start off with you telling us about that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, there's a fan film festival out there. I think it's all internet. There's no, like, you know, viewing or anything. It's called Morgana, I think is how you pronounce it. And they do quarterly award shows for all kinds of different films, not just fan films, but they had a fan film category. So I thought, hey, why not, you know, drop my film in there and, you know, see what happens. And what happened, you know, thanks to my great star of the show, I think that we won because the acting was, I thought, was one of our better performances. And we had a great lead character.
That's excellent. Caitlin, that's a lot of good praise for you on that. So you helped win this award. You should take that, and I applaud you.
Well, to be honest with you, I actually told Glenn that mostly the award went to him. I mean, he's the one who wrote the script. It was his idea. It was his concept. It was his plan of action, him being the director, telling me exactly what he wanted. And the fact that I was actually able to portray the character, I mean, I am very pleased I was able to stand up to his standards and to help with the award. But mostly the award goes to him.
Caitlin, I've seen your work before in other films that Glenn has produced, and I would say that you are a good portion of that award, because you are an excellent actress. I mean, I've been following you since I saw you in the X-Files takeoffs.
Yeah, the Federation files were a lot of fun, but thank you, Frank. I really appreciate that.
Now, one thing I did have a question, because I hadn't seen this film before, and I wanted to wait until we actually reviewed this before I sat down and watched it, because I'll be honest, I watched Stargate the movie back in the day, and my friend Adam Mullen, he wanted to do a Stargate fan film a couple of years back, and I tried to watch the series. I couldn't really get into it. He said, watch it two seasons and then you'll be hooked. I was like, okay. And I just never found the time to. So with this, I was like, I'm going to wait until we're reviewing it, and then I'll watch it. So at first I was kind of confused, but I easily stepped into that world and was like, oh, okay, I understand exactly what's going on now. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The credits, that wasn't like a, like when you watch the, like Aaron Warren's, Planetary Step, that's an Orville fan film, or you watch, Starship Valiant, like that's a Star Trek fan film. This one wasn't a Stargate fan film. This seemed to be more like a, hey, this is, a generic film series. We just happened to be doing Stargate this week. Is that just my interpretation? Is it possible to be doing like maybe Doctor Who the next one for this film series? Or was that, am I misreading that?
You are 100% on the mark.
Okay.
We're starting a new series called Sci-Fi Shorts, which if you paid attention to the credits, that was in there real quickly. So we wanted an opening that could easily be modified to do Space 1999, which is in the works, X-Files, which I have one in the works, or Jurassic Park. So we didn't want to. This series is truly an anthology. It's not only going to be a different cast and crew every time, it's going to be a different universe every time. So this doesn't lock us into only doing Star Trek or only doing Star Wars. This is going to be whatever I feel like building. We're going to make a movie out of it.
It really opens you up.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
Why?
Now,
Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, B-Man. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You go ahead.
Why branch out away from Star Trek in doing all these other things?
Because I enjoy more than Star Trek, to be quite honest. I mean, X-Files was my go-to sci-fi series for years. And then when Stargate started, I actually did not care for the movie. But when the series came out, I was totally hooked. So this is just, you know, like I've always said, I do the fan films for fun. So this is just me having more fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know what would be cool to do is Alien Nation.
Oh, that's a bold
kicking
one.
Kicking it around.
Yeah, that Alien Nation would be good.
I was liking Space 1999, Alien Nation. That sounds good. I think that would make for a good one because that's your buddy cop show. Just happened to be that the partner was an alien. That might be a lot of head makeup budget for that.
Here's one of our extras from the show.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
And she's gone. That's one of my daughters. We're all meeting in Chicago for a wedding, so that's why the venue is a little different, and I'm having all kinds of trouble.
You know what would be the perfect fan film? Firefly.
I'm sure that everybody wants to do that. I would love to see a Firefly fan film.
Yeah, there's a couple out there, but I hear you really have to schmooze up to the right people. I don't think they just let you do it willy-nilly.
Oh.
Yeah, probably not.
So on this one, I know normally it takes you a short amount of time to make a Star Trek film when you guys kind of put your minds to it. How long, in comparison, did this take you? Because I know Star Trek stuff you have that stuff easily on hand. You have the uniforms, you have the props. If you don't have it, Wolf, you are known in the Star Trek fan film world as Mr. Fix It, Mr. Make It. How would you say this compares to making a Star Trek fan film? Because you were one of the very few people who stepped outside that Star Trek box.
Hey, I want Caitlin to tell you how long this took.
Let's hear it.
This film took over 2 years to actually complete.
2 years.
And the reason why is because of the scheduling, the getting the right props, getting the right scenes, making sure that everybody was happy with everything that was going on. It took a while, but it enabled us to get the different scenes. Like the snow on the ground is real snow. That is not a green screen. And it's the same when we were up on the bridge. That was a real bridge. Trust me. That was not a green screen.
Caitlin is scared of heights.
Are you really?
I really am. Yes.
Yeah, I relate to that, Caitlin.
I'm 6'5", so I can't be afraid of heights, or I would be in a lot of trouble.
But one of the scenes that Glenn was actually telling me to make as real as possible was, you know, the body scene where I was throwing it off of the bridge. And so I was going to make it as real as possible. I told him, do not worry. You do not have to worry. This will be heavy as heck for me. And I will inch my way across that bridge because I was scared to death.
I bet. That's got to be scary. How'd you do it? Mm-hmm. Just block it out.
No, I'm like, don't look down. Don't look down. Don't look down.
Don't look down. Don't look down. What is
the harder part was having her kick it off because she had to get to the edge.
Yeah. With you doing something different from a Star Trek fan film, is there one in terms of the drama? Don't want to go by episode, but I want to talk about genres. Is it easier to do a fan film of Star Trek, or is it easier to do a fan film of anything else? Where's the challenge as to which one is more complicated and which one just doesn't seem like it takes as much time, energy, or effort to do?
I would actually say, contrary to what we experienced, Stargate should be the easiest to do because you don't have to actually have any sets. Now, you know, we shot in a missile silo for the Stargate, you know, command area, but you know, that was so small in the film that I'm sure a lot of people didn't even think that we used any location or sets because Stargate only goes to planets that are Earth-like. Correct. So you don't have to worry about, I got to make the world look alien. I got to build all these. So really the premise of Stargate is easy to do because you're on another Earth-like planet. You just got to write a story and get some military uniforms and you're all, you know, good to go. Unfortunately, like Caitlin said, this took as long to make as any film I made except the first one. And yeah, we had so many logistical problems. you know, actors moving away before we got time to, you know, we cast and then we lose that cast member. Actually, Caitlin was integral in getting it finished. She actually found me the last actor I needed to get everything, you know, together. So, you know, Caitlin, you know, we're a mutual admiration society. You know, she says the film came together because of me, and I did organize it, but I relied on her acting and ultimately her contacts to get me the last person I needed. So this film, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke. This film, she really helped me finish.
I think if you have a good team, that is normally the case. You've got to work as a team. Everybody, you know, gives each other accolades, but when you all come to the end of the day, it's everybody's effort that puts into whatever their performance, the behind scenes, because you can't do it without that. I mean, if you don't have gaffers, or you don't have somebody shooting with a camera, you don't have the actors, you don't have the people, you just don't get it done. So you have to be a team. And what the nice thing about the fan film community is that most of us are a family. I mean, a lot of us have worked together on many different things. So we know how to work with each other and we know our ins and outs. And in the long run, it's going to make it easier, you know. From that.
And I have to tell you this, Glenn. Recently, I was made aware that I have officially become part of the Star Trek fan film community and got my Twitter trophy for it. I had a person call for a boycott of my podcast. And the boycott
because you had me on it.
No, it was because my fiance and I did an interview with
Alec Peter.
Yeah, Alec Peters. Oh my God, I can't. My brain is just faulty. Yeah, we did a interview with Alec Peters talking about his animal rescue thing that he was doing. We had a really nice talk, great time, very good guy. Love talking to him. Definitely want to talk with him again. I message him on Facebook here and there just to, you know, check in, just, you know, make sure everything's good and all that. And so this guy that runs one of the Facebook groups, he was on Twitter and saw the post that the podcast made about that. And so I earned myself a block, an unfollow and a block, and a call for a boycott of my podcast. So to me, I guess that means I'm now.
You are initiated.
All six of those people won't watch you.
I'm part of the cabal, but I'm not part of the cabal. And okay. So there you go. Is there, can I get like a plaque or some kind of laminated something, some kind of trophy?
So we're now one of us.
One of us.
So one thing I have to say as a, cause again, I went into this film completely blind, not being a Stargate fan and not knowing anything about it. You know, please don't crucify me, anyone that is a hardcore Stargate fan, but this actually made me want to know more about the universe. Cause being able to jump from planet to planet, like, because again, I only know the movie, and I think I saw maybe half the first episode or something. Those little spider things, is that part of the series? Talk to me like I'm five. Where does this movie
we do that all into? The time?
Frank. Shenanigans. You know, where does this movie fit into like the series or the movie, or does it, or is this its own thing? Or I mean, because I really enjoyed what you made. Where does this fit into the continuity of the rest of it?
Okay, this would fit in. Well, do you understand like what the SG numbers mean? I guess we start with that. The Stargate. SG numbers are it's like in the military, it's like a platoon. So first platoon, okay. Second platoon, third platoon. So we're 13th platoon or whatever you want to call it. It's a okay. Four-man team that goes out exploring. Now, the TV series is SG-1 because that's, you know, the first team, and that's But there's many teams out there. So many teams are going into many different planets. Now, the little bug things you're talking about are called replicators. And they were a big enemy of the entire galaxy about halfway through the run of the series. And the Stargate people, you know, had to fight them along with other aliens helping them out. It eventually defeated them. But they're Stargate's version of the Borg. So they're mechanical beings that, you know, only they are fit to exist. Everybody else is just fodder. So yes, they're part of the canon. These particular ones we had in, if you paid attention to, you know, Caitlin's lines, they're not quite as evolved as the ones in the show. So these, although it's not defined, may or may not be, you know, beta tests of a kind of replicator. They're not the almost undefeatable ones that are in the show, but they're replicator like, and that's all we needed for the show, was to have a nemesis to strike a little fear into, you know, the team. But we didn't want the team to get totally wiped out, because I have plans for Caitlin.
And that was the like I said, going into this whole thing, like, when the people started bickering, I was like, oh man, this is like most people in that type of situation would start to bicker and kind of bitch at each other and, you know, gripe or whatever. And then when she finds the dead body, I actually, to me, I was watching, I was like, wait, is that the person in the first, you know, the one that was holding the people off? Wait, who is that? And then when she walks up to those people and she's like, hey, it ain't that dude. Pow, pow, kapow, pow, pow, pow. And he's like, ah, snap the neck. And I'm like, dude, it's a spider person. Like, dude, yes. I was completely like, oh, this is cool. Like, I wanted to know more about it, because, again, going into it completely fresh, like, you kind of made me want to go back, you know, go and watch that series, because I'm like, this, it reminds me of when I watched Doctor Who for the first time, you know, which was like maybe 10 years ago, and just go like, wow, this is, I'm so used to Star Trek, but this is something sci-fi that's completely different, and wow, what are the mechanics of this world? And I loved that, because I had no idea going into it that I would enjoy it as much as I did. So I really, really liked that. And seeing Josh, like, I was like, dude, my boy's in this. That's cool. Like, that was cool. That was wonderful. But I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was really cool for a 20-minute film. You really do get that sense of isolation. Question. Again, I don't know anything about the Stargate stuff. This planet, yes. The other houses or whatnot that are on this planet, was this a civilized planet at one point? Or are these other people who've come through the Stargate that maybe built shop up here? Or like, what's the history of this planet?
Do you know, Caitlin, or do you want me to keep talking?
Well, technically, that's for you to interpret, but the way that it worked was that the houses were already built along with the tools and artifacts that I found, but they looked abandoned. So to me, it would seem like the people did try to settle there, but then they moved on.
Okay.
And Caitlin, yeah, you know, for V-Man in particular, because you don't know the series, The Stargates are run by the basically gods of ancient Egypt, but they're actually aliens. And they were basically slavers. They came to Earth and took people and used them as slaves on other planets. And that's why when they go to these other planets, most of the people they run into are human, because they're descendants of, you know, Earthlings that have been stolen away. You know, all these abductions that are going on right now, that's, you know, that those UFOs that are taking people, that's the people that run the Stargate. But anyway, yeah, most of the planets are settled. There's buildings on them, and they range from, you know, technology from Egyptian time, you know, up to our time. They do find a few more advanced planets that were able to get away from these aliens. They're called Ga'ul, by the way. And then, you know, get their technology, you know, worthy of able to fight them off. But the Ga'ul kind of suppress the worlds they're on, because they don't want to be overthrown. So they keep you at a more primitive state.
They don't want any any unions organizing, no strikes. That's what they're doing. The Vance, you will definitely want to get into Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, and Stargate Universe. Those are good shows. I definitely recommend going through those. And I thought it was, it surprised me, and I'm trying to think if there had been any other case of this, and I'm going to just go ahead and bet there's probably at least one. But I thought that each side of a gate, in order for it to function, had to have a DHD on each side. It just needs to be on one.
What's a DHD?
Dial home device. It's
what's that?
It's like a round hieroglyphic looking kind of thing. It's got rings, and like you turn the outer and inner rings in such a way that it
lines, lines up. Okay.
Lines up.
Okay.
It's your alien keyboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alien keyboard. And the chevrons turn.
I think you can get into any gate, but if there's not a dial home device there, you can't then leave.
Right.
Right.
So my understanding was you did not have to have a DHD to get there, but you had to have a DHD to leave.
Yes.
I always had the impression that the DHDs could be hidden someplace else, but there was always a DHD somewhere. I don't know, maybe.
Because they're hard.
Where's the one that was in ancient Egypt when they found the gate?
Yeah.
They had to build a computer. The one in Stargate Command is a computer. They don't have a DHD. They figured out how to make one.
Yeah. So I had a question. Okay. When the airplane goes over,
yes.
Who was that from? Was that from the aliens or was that from our people?
Wow, the fact that you asked that makes me think we didn't do our Foley work right.
Seriously, we sent
it through. Earth sent it through the gate on a, because they're exploring planets. They just randomly dial gates and send recon out to research a planet. And so that's a drone from Colorado, went through the gate, was just doing standard surveys and happened to run into Caitlin.
No, you didn't do a bad job. Because that's what I thought I heard them say, our drone. And I was like, okay, that's from our people.
Yeah.
My question is this, because I thought the dial thing,
yeah,
was there a way to get back? And I thought, okay, that's why they can't get back, because they don't have the boop, 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 right, to get back.
Right.
And then I thought, okay, if they have a drone, how did the drone get back to our people if they don't have the beep boops?
It didn't. It was sending a signal. It's a weird thing, Vance. On the show, the wormhole that's made between the gates is one way for matter, but signals can go both ways. So they send these drones out because there might not be a DHD there, but they can still get video signal back to see what's going on.
So I didn't know that. Okay.
It is kind of weird that, you can only go through it one way, but you can talk back to it.
That's crazy.
It's a little odd. Yeah, but you'd have to know that for it to make sense. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I was watching that.
Yeah. Everyone knew it except Vance, but
yeah. I'm sorry, a happy audience is like, look, shut up, fat man. I'm trying to, we want to talk to Wolf. Like, what are you doing? I apologize, everyone. I apologize.
No. Don't apologize. You're learning something.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Like I said, this really got me interested because, again, like I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, I'm interested in, like, we're going to these different places and you know, robot spiders, whatnot. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. You know, so again, you made me want to learn more about a series I haven't, you know, known much about. So, you know, again, I'm excited.
And then you'll catch on to the politics that are going on in the background between different. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that's going on. Through the entire show, but that's what makes it so good. I heard that they were going to reboot one of them. I kind of heard that, but you know, you never know.
Yeah, it's been rumored for years. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
That might be interesting. Kind of like what they did with Picard, brought back a sequel series after such an amount of time, which I don't disagree with that. I think that I can get used to seeing stuff coming back that are older shows, older franchises. If you told me that SG-1 was coming back again, I would definitely watch that. Because
it's like we're not trying to reinvent it, you know, with the same people with different casting.
Yeah. The problem with, if you take Picard, for instance, and again, this is my opinion, I could be wrong. Look at the first two seasons of Picard. I believe they horribly failed to give us something that was satisfactory. But you look at season three, and I think season three was the perfect season of Star Trek because it gave us enough nostalgia, but it was completely fresh for a new generation to kind of latch onto and look at and go, okay, let's continue to go forward. I have no problem with a show, not necessarily rebooting, but a show continuing as long as you give us something that is fresh, but not so boxy, you know, because nobody needs to be preached at, you know, nobody needs that. I don't mind. I'm pretty open-minded, but I don't want to be beat with liberal ideals. But, you know, progression is always a good thing in some capacity. But the soapbox needs to be stepped off of in every capacity, I think. But I think Picard Season 3 is a perfect example of, hey, give the fans what they want. You know, Season 1, 2, not good. But I think any series, whether it's X-Files or this one, I mean, because look what they do with Battlestar Galactica. I think that's also a good example of giving the fans what they want. I mean, that went for four seasons, and it was great. It's one of that's my favorite sci-fi show. Everyone thinks it's Star Trek, and I'm like, no. I mean, DS9 is my favorite Trek, but Battlestar Galactica is my favorite sci-fi. It's wonderful drama, you know, but it's a reboot done right, you know.
Yeah.
So, Wolf, I have a question. What series is, you say, Space Odyssey?
Space 1999.
That's, yeah. Is next. What other ones are you thinking about doing next for your shorts?
Well, Caitlin and I have already worked on a Jurassic Park one. Mm-hmm. And then,
any lawyer? Wait,
it's already out?
No, We've shot half of it.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do an actual X-Files one, which also will have something to do with Caitlin, but she doesn't know anything about it yet. So surprise!
your calendar is filling up, Caitlin. He's got you on.
You know, let me tell you about Caitlin. When Caitlin agrees to do something, I never worry that she's not going to be on time, or she's not going to know her lines, or she's not being willing to help with makeup, or, I mean, whatever I ask, if I need help, Caitlin's there for me. She's never let me down. She's always been prepared, and she helps prepare the other people who came not prepared. She's like, you know, next to Dan Reynolds, who polishes this all. Well, excuse me. So Dan, who does all the technical stuff, next to Dan, Caitlin's like the next most important person in my group.
I watched her in Kingsland when we were down there with Josh. And I mean, she was working with Alan B. I can't remember her name, but you know,
Alex,
that's right. And, I mean, she was just going all over the place, and she was incredible. Her energy level is super high, and that is, you know, something that you need. Of course, I watched you too, you know. Okay, I need something out of air. Here it is. Okay, here you go. I'm just sitting there going, I want to get these guys down to Crossroads.
It's amazing. It's amazing what happens when you get, you know, people together that have that professionalism. They're friends behind the scenes, but when it's time to get shit done, you know, it's like, hey, friendships aside, it's time to work. And then you get everything done, and it's like, okay, buddy, buddy aside, let's boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Okay, cut. And then, okay, back to friendship, you know? And that's like, that's, you can definitely see, like, take Crisis, for instance. If anyone hasn't seen it, go watch Crisis. You'll enjoy it, you know? What's the X-Files type Federation Files film you guys did?
Voices from the Past.
Go watch that one. Like, I love that film. It's like Temporal Mechanics. You'll love that one. It's that was the very first one I saw Caitlin in. Wonderful film. But you watch those films and you can see how much fun the actors are having with the content that's there, regardless of the situation. Like, you can tell how much fun they're having. And when you look at on Facebook or wherever the pictures are posted, the behind the scenes stuff, you can see the joy in the people's eyes. And that's the thing, like, a lot of people, you know, they'll fake smile and they've got, you know, especially in social media world, like, people do the fake smile shit all the time.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that, you know, Caitlin, I love when you smile. When you smile, like, you kind of have this glow about you, and I like that. Your character had that, especially on screen. I enjoyed that. You are a wonderful actress. I have to say, it's always a joy to see you. When I saw that you were in this film and I heard you were coming on this podcast, I was like, I'm really looking forward to, I'm always enjoyed to do the show, but I was really excited to do this one. Cause I was like, great, I finally get to meet her. Not to fanboy out, cause I know I've said this a million times, especially before the show, but I it really is a pleasure to finally get to talk to you. Cause I really respect your work. Wolf and Dan have really, they chose well when they chose to work with you. And I know Dan and Wolf, they are the most talented people behind the camera. They chose well when they chose you.
And don't let Caitlin tell you I don't take care of her, because I gave her lunch that day. And did you see the way she scarfed on that beef jerky when she opened up that box?
Yeah.
No. You said eat turkey. Eat it faster. Eat it faster.
The sad part is Dan made her redo the scene like 5 times.
Oh.
So she just had to keep stuffing jerky down her face.
Oh, man.
She's probably intentionally sabotaging the scene so she can get more jerky. More jerky.
Like, oh, man. Yeah, she's like, a bag is empty. Give me some more.
More jerky. This stuff is good. Keep it coming.
She was going to carry it with her to go through the gate. You know, that's one of the things that I really loved about your special effects. I love the way their transporter ring system works. When it comes down. And that must have been, how did you do that?
Well, you know, you guys need to get Dan on here and talk. That is hard. That is so hard. Dan wanted to kill me when I said I needed to do that. But no, you guys really need it. I don't know, because I'm not a technical guy. I just sat there and watched him work on it. And
anyone got Dan on Facebook?
We got like 2 frames. You know,
anyone got Dan on Facebook? See, we can drag him in here. Yeah, see if we can get him in here tonight talking about this now.
Oh, maybe. Dan R. Reynolds. Hey, Vance can send him a link. You got him on your – can you send him a link?
If I try to do hickey off this thing, it'll boot me off and I'll never be able to get back on it.
Okay.
Said Dan Reynolds.
Yeah,
let me tell you guys what. You know, Dan's releasing a film in a few weeks. He's the director of it. Just – review that film and get him on, and then you can ask him all this technical stuff, because I just think they make it happen, and he does.
What film is it he's releasing?
A Mother.
That's right.
Yeah, Federation Files, okay. Star Trek Mother. Yeah,
sure. Okay. We'll make sure we ask him about that. One besides that effect, the spider. What all went into doing that effect? Is that also a Dan question?
Well, the digital question is for Dan, but I did build some real ones, so they're not all digital.
How did you do that?
I go to Goodwill and I find a bunch of toys that look like I can make something out of them, and I take them apart and I glue them together, and there you go.
Wow.
The worst spider, actually, I made out of a little mechanical something else, and it played music when you turned it on. And it never did exactly what I wanted, but every time we turned it on, it would start playing music.
That's crazy, man.
You're my type of prop maker. You know, hey, is that, you know.
I can't say we're no budget productions because that's already taken, but we are low budget productions.
It's like, what can I do with these? I'll figure
exactly.
it out.
Dude, and that's thing, like, he's like a lot of my inspiration came from like people like George Kyan, who does that. He goes to the thrift store and sees shit, or he goes to the garage sale, sees something, and he's like, oh, I can turn this into that. And a lot of my inspiration also came from people like Wolf, who's like, oh, you need a chair? Okay, give me 3 weeks, I'll make you a chair. I'm like, really? And he's boom, 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 here you go. And I'm looking at it going, oh my God, that's a cool chair. And Roy still uses it. In fact, we filmed with it a couple weeks ago for his Kobayashi Maru scene. You remember the chair you built for Melbourne?
Yeah,
we're still using that. That's how crafty you are. I mean, you're so smart on how you do stuff. I mean, you are. I mean, most people would be like, I have to buy an authentic this, and I got to spend thousands upon thousands, and it's very easy to go into debt on doing a fan film, you know, and you proved, hey, I don't want to go into debt. I want to actually make a film. You know,
that was the one rule my wife gave me. No debt. You can play, but you can't go into debt. So that's why I paid Caitlin in on-screen eating of jerky. That's the only meal jerky out of me.
You pay your actors in jerky, and they're like, oh, I'm coming. That's good. Yes, let's do this.
I would love to.
Have to drink the spring water. You wouldn't give her bottled water.
Well, they actually drank out of that river. Yeah.
There's Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Thanks for jumping right on. Didn't think you'd be able to make it right in. We're talking about Stargate SG-13, and there were couple questions that came up, and Glenn was telling us Dan would be able to answer that one. So do you have a few minutes to join us in this discussion of that film?
Sure.
All right. Hey, Dan.
Caught me off guard.
No, you're going to find out I lied the whole time. Dan doesn't know anything.
Oh, Dan, it was nice to see you again. Come back when you can't stay longer.
Go ahead. What was the question that we had for Dan?
I had about the rings at the end.
Question. How did you do that with the rings for the transporter?
You know, you caught me at a disadvantage because I have not been listening to the conversation. I just got this message from Caitlin to want me to join immediately. So you'll
the rings, Dan, at the end of Stargate 13, where you beam me up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. I will tell you that was one of the more tougher special effects that I've ever done. Because not only do you have to mask the outside, you have to mask the backside. Mm. And it was, I did a lot of frame by frame techniques. So, yeah. And it took, I would say that it took several days to complete. I don't know how many seconds it was on, but it was, you know, it was not that easy. Really wasn't.
Well, it went for at least a good few seconds.
Yeah, a few seconds. Yeah. A day a second.
A day a second.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any point when you were doing it that you were like, hey, we can't do this effect. It's too, like, when you go into something like that, was there a point where you were just like, nope, it's too complicated. Let's figure out something else.
No, because I know that it was done. It was, somebody had done it. I wanted to find out how it was done. And the first thing I do is I seek out YouTube and try to find somebody that's done it. And nobody's ever done it that wants to tell how it's. So I'm trying to get the dogs in, so excuse me.
Yeah, we caught you at a disadvantage. Yeah, that's for sure.
This is my bedtime, actually, and
sorry, Dan.
No, that's fine. I'll just wait up until it's time to go. But back to the rings, I really couldn't find anybody that knew how to do the, because when you're doing an effect like that, you've got a foreground and then the rings are you have a background too, with a materialization and a demirror materialization of the transporter room. It's just on the front that you're worried about. With this effect, you need to worry about the ring going around the back. So you had to cut and mask everything from the back and the front. So it took forever.
Well, in a sense,
but it was spectacular.
Yeah, in a sense, you're setting the standard, because I don't think there's been has there been another Stargate fan film before?
There's a couple, but I don't think they've ever ringed anybody in and out.
Okay, Sam, so you're kind of too.
The ones that I've seen, they're not. They didn't put the detail in that I wanted to put in. I wanted to do it in a way that looked more realistic than just kind of halfway doing it. So yeah.
I must say, yeah, you guys, when you guys do something, I mean, take Galaxy Hopper for instance. When you guys had the R2-D2 unit right there, you know, I mean, that looked authentic from the Star Wars universe. You guys didn't have to put that type of detail and whatnot. I mean, you guys, whenever you do something, you guys always seem to put 110 effort into it. And this, to me, looking at this, you know, this looked like something from, a legitimate TV show.
You can blame Glenn for most of that, because he just, can we do this? Can we do this?
And what I should be saying is, can you do this? Can you do this?
What I want to do is say, can't we just cut to an explosion without seeing it? Yeah, but it'd be so cool if we had them blow up and all their body parts just went flying.
Oh. Pioneering right there.
There goes 3 days of my life I'll never get back.
I will say this. I commend Dan, because everything he does at 110%. Everything. If it doesn't look right, he will make it look right. He will make it look as real as possible, as realistic as possible, through hours and days of work, however long it takes before he'll release something. And so I commend him for his professionalism.
Yeah.
Well, still, you want it to be right.
Well, if you're going to do it right.
I think that's why we have so much fun, is because we try to put, you know, as much detail as we can possibly do, you know, and still follow the story and make it enjoyable and try to stick to canon if we can. So, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, the quality is, no matter what production you guys are working on, whether it's a Stargate or a Star Trek or you guys, the quality is always there. Whenever you look at a Federation Files or a Wolf Reynolds production, you know that you're getting a quality production, you know. I can't wait to see what you guys are going to be producing next. Wolf said you guys are going to be doing a Jurassic Park, Space 1999. Did I get that right?
Yep,
you got it right.
Ah, see, I'm learning, people. I'm learning. See,
Space 1999. Yeah.
So, I can't wait to see what you guys keep putting out, and more Star Trek. You know, fingers crossed. So,
well,
you,
Mother you've... really soon,
and Mother's coming out. Yeah, Mother's coming out in a couple weeks. Would you be interested in joining us to discuss that film?
I'm in the throes of it right now, so I'd love to get it done by the end of the year. I'm not sure that I will be there. I've got a lot of special effects that I'm wanting to put in, And once I get a certain look, then I can, you know, cut and paste to the other scenes that have the same effects. But I'm still working on those, and it just, it takes a while. And I have seen one, whether it's a dream sequence, a dream scene. And I'm trying to get that shot this week. So once that, and I've got more than any other film, I've got more ADR than I really want to put in. And I'm going to have to get some of the actors to come back and read their lines again, that we just didn't get great audio. But I, you know, in the past we just let that go, but this time around, I want to make sure that the audio is good.
The audio, I think, can make or break a film.
Oh, it does.
If it doesn't sound good, you just kind of lose that interest in it. So there's definitely.
You can take Hollywood productions, and if the sound, if the microphone's in the center of the room, you instantly get that, something's wrong. I don't like this movie. Even though it could be the most phenomenal story to be told, if the sound is not there, then you don't want, especially, I mean, what we're doing is we're creating fantasy pieces of work, and the whole concept of this is to propel somebody into a fantasy state of mind where they forget what reality is. And if they're bugged by a visual effect or a sound effect that doesn't sound right, or overdoing Foley work, that drives me nuts. When those footsteps are louder than they're supposed to be, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Those little subtle things just drive people nuts, and they really don't know why sometimes that the film is bad and they can't put their finger on it. It's because of all of the things that are wrong in a film.
Well, we can, you know, take for instance, Twilight Zone from like the 1950s. Those effects weren't all that great, but we watch it because we want to be entertained. Like we're willing to suspend, you know, that disbelief because we don't mind, but the audio, bad audio will pull us out of that. You know, we go to our children's plays because we want to be entertained. We're not going to sit there and nitpick and go, hey, you didn't draw that doesn't look like the sun. It's not glowing. Yeah. You know, we don't, you know, we want to be entertained, but audio will take us out of a film. One of my films, Cageless, like the only thing you can really hear is the wind blowing into my microphone because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. People have asked me, why don't you go back and ADR that? And I'm like, because that's a lesson learned. I mean, I will keep a bad film because it teaches other people, hey, don't make the mistake I did. And that's that, you know, but that's what we learn. Bad visuals are okay sometimes, but bad audio, it's not forgivable.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad we have Dan on here because to me, the first scene he edited and put Foley and everything in was the opening scene with the firefight. He blew me out of the water with that because, you know, Caitlin was there. We have plastic guns. There's no bullets. There's nothing. And that scene was believable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I mean, special effects have always been good in your films. I mean, it's
I mean, he outdid himself. When I saw that, I believe we were firing rounds downrange in there. But Dan should talk about it. But what sold it? You can see the muzzle flash on the character's face, which of course wasn't there because we didn't have bullets, we didn't have flares. Mm-hmm. They were just standing there going pow pow pow. And Dan made it look like they were killing off, you know, replicators.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, I watched a video on, and it was one of the first YouTube how-to videos that I ever watched when I was doing special effects. And it was how to do the phaser effect, you know, where the beam comes out. And this guy comes around a corner and shoots a phaser. And all I cared about was the phaser effect. But this guy spent 10 minutes talking about how to build the phaser and how to make it sparkle when it came out and make it look realistic. And I appreciated that. then he spent another 15, 20 minutes on how to make it realistic. Because when he put the gun around the corner, he spent all that time showing how the light would reflect on the brick wall and on the guy's face. And that stuck with me because looking at the two versions, one looked okay, but the other one looked phenomenal. So, you know, I'm always looking for the phenomenal. If I can cheat somehow and doing it on a budget, that's kind of
if you got those 3 days to kill, you know, that's what you.
Yeah, if I have 3 days to kill.
We actually had another interview show that actually thought we had guns. They were trying to figure out what kind of rifles they were and what kind of bullets we used.
That's very convincing if they thought it was real. Yes.
Well, yes. They were, I think they were 14 gauge plastic.
You did. It was, the sound was good, the muzzle flash, and it's nice when you see a film where there's an effect and the person goes that extra mile to make it just to soup up a little thing that some people may not notice. And you're taking that into consideration. Like, who's going to notice this? Well, it doesn't mean.
I think you do it so they don't notice it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want them to say, you don't want them to say that's fake. That's a right. fake gun.
Yeah. Well, you watch a lot of the YouTube videos today and you watch it and you're like, something's off, and you just instantly recognize that. But when you watch something and you just gloss over it, you're absolutely right. You don't want them to notice that. You don't want them to be watching something and go, wait, what was that? You know, and that's exactly this. I wouldn't have noticed, you know, and I've seen a lot of CGI, you know, so yeah, you guys always go top notch, above and beyond. It's remarkable what you guys do, you know.
Yeah, and if you're not looking at it and saying, was that real? Then you're not noticing it, and you've done what you wanted to do. Yeah. Nobody's questioning whether it's real or not. They're just taking it as that's what it is, a shot.
Yeah. Well, then we succeeded then.
Yeah. Yep. And the fact that your actors sold it really well. You know, the story, like for me, everything about this movie worked. Like, the story was good. Like I said, I went into this not knowing anything about Stargate, but wanting to know more now because I thought it was interesting. The characters worked. I cared about what happened. Even when that one dude turned out to be fake and then she's like, pew, 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 and I'm snapping the neck and whatnot. And I'm like, whoa, you know, it's like, yeah, the whole thing was just, it was great, you know? And then when she goes like all Laura Ingalls Wilder living off the woods and stuff. And I'm like, that's cool. You know, it was a good film. I liked it a lot. You know, there was a lot there where, usually I say, you know, if you don't know anything about a film and you go into it and you can still understand it, that's a victory. And so to me, you know, you made a fan of, you know, so, yeah.
Thank you. The only thing we couldn't get Caitlin to do was to actually hold a real snake.
No.
You wouldn't hold a real snake?
No.
There are plenty out there that are safe.
In the world. I don't care. No.
I do like at the end how you, Wolf, were like, you were like, dude, did you hear that? And she's like, nah, there's creepy shit here. We got to go. And you're like, all right. And then that spider's like, and I'm like, oh, dude, you know. That was cool. I was like, dude, we're spiders. Fuck this planet.
let me get this right. Poor Caitlin had to endure the scared of heights and get her touch a slithering reptile. Do you have an HR?
We also made her wade into a freezing cold water to spear rubber fish.
Yeah. File a grievance.
I don't know. These are your friends. Maybe you should get better enemies. No, it's great. It's great.
No, they look out for your safety too. And I mean, I love working with Glenn and Dan. I really do. Along with Josh and Tyler and the whole community, I mean, has just been so welcoming. And it's a joy and a pleasure and a privilege to actually, you know, mm-hmm. be able to act and also just to be involved. I mean, it's just a lot of fun, and I hope, you know, we bring a lot of joy to everybody else.
Well, you know,
what the downfall of all my actors is we warm up to each other and they tell me what they don't like. So one of the girls in the film, you like, Vance, the voices from the past, the young girl, Caitlin, she's scared of heights and doesn't like horses. So guess what? We had a repelling in a cave and feeding a horse.
Just for her. That's, there you go.
Tell me
they're
something.
Not charging you for the therapy. Just think of this. You're getting free therapy.
That's right. I'm making them overcome their fears because they don't want to disappoint the audience.
One thing I'm going to point out, Glenn, that wasn't young Caitlin. That was young.
Yeah, Candace, I'm so sorry. I'm getting so old. All you girls that start with C, I don't know. But yeah, it was Candace Lambert. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Caitlin loves horses.
You do. You're a horse fan. Well, there you go. Come up with a fan film that involves Caitlin on a horse on top of a mountain chasing snakes.
No.
I think that would be excellent.
Yes.
Hey, Jay, I'm going to find out where you live, and then you can be the actor in the film, okay?
You know, not just the mountain. You know those swingy bridges?
Oh.
Yeah.
Ride the horse across the swing.
Hey, I feel Indiana Jones coming up.
Yeah, one of those freaking Temple of Doom bridges.
But every third step, you're missing one of those, you know, beams, you know, so you gotta.
Right. And the beams that are there are gonna be made out of styrofoam.
Yeah. Your foot goes through one.
I'm shaking in my boots because I can't stand heights either. And just the thought of that, I'm going,
oh my gosh. Well, a scene that got cut, I had her spear a bird with a stick. The one that was ended up on the fire, before that, we had her actually, you know, putting on a shish kebab stick, but that didn't make the cut for some reason. I thought that was cool having her just ram that stick through that bird.
Well, you didn't do the editing?
How did no, get Dan cut? Does the edit.
Oh, okay. Okay, Dan, so let's hear it. What was wrong with that scene?
I probably didn't get direction from the director.
Oh, kicking it back to you, Wolf. Kicking it back to you.
Okay, we got to re-edit. You know, we got to go back and start from scratch.
Honestly, I think we talked about that after the fact, and I didn't. It was not something that I thought was important, but you wanted to see that stick go up the bird's butt.
This is a hard and weird face for you, Wolf. This is a
my God.
Movie. Wow.
You know, the stuff that doesn't make the movie is actually funnier and sometimes more interesting to talk about than the stuff that does make the movie.
Yeah.
I'm
sure it was time or flow or pacing. I'm sure there was a reason that we didn't use it, but.
And we can do a director's cut if you really want that in there.
I think we should do a bird butt cut.
Well, we'll review that one too then, and then we'll let you know what we think.
Yeah. Okay. I think the scene at the very beginning where they're around the campfire, you know, we got that we'd done a campfire scene before that when we did Mask.
Yes.
Yeah. You remember that? And the fire kept going out. So I wanted to make sure that the fire was good and going. So when we started, so we got the fire going and it was at least what, a story and a half tall.
Yes.
The actors behind the campfire.
Yeah. You couldn't see them. Yeah.
You couldn't hardly see them at all. But I said, now just pretend that you're warming yourself at the fire. Said, we're burning up. And I still have that footage. I think we used it somewhere in the film, but you know, they're just standing there burning up. I mean, the fire is just so high and they're inches away, and I think the microphone started to melt.
It did,
yeah, something melted. Yeah, something melted. Yeah.
Oh my God.
People don't understand when they see a movie the stuff like that goes behind, you know. It's, wow, this is a fire. Yeah, well, I'm wearing this, and then I got something else under it, and it's 90 degrees outside.
Yep.
When we shot the outdoor scenes for Rebirth, the reason we decided to do the jackets was because we thought it was going to be raining. So I said, instead of getting the uniforms, we'll just do jackets. So we put that all together. It was 85 degrees out there running around in these things.
Oh,
it was horrible.
And what was odd is Glenn wanted everyone to wear sunglasses, whether it was day or night.
You did. Hey,
let's be clear. One of the actors wanted to wear his sunglasses. Oh, so well, we had to be kind of uniform with it. But the bad thing is, he wore mirror sunglasses, so Dan had to take all the action that you could see in the glasses out.
Yeah, I can just imagine that. Yeah.
That's oh my God, you really had to edit all the stuff out of his glasses.
Yes.
Yes. Frame by frame. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's got to be.
I would have told him take those glasses off.
Yeah, that's painstaking. Wow.
Hold up. I had kind of the same glasses. So.
Oh. Wow.
You got to do what Caitlin wants.
Only in certain scenes.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean you got to do what Caitlin wants? She's got her jerky. She's okay.
That was the bribe. Yeah. You got your jerky. Now get out of here.
Yeah,
get out of here. You bother me.
Don't wear those glasses ever again.
Yeah, really. You don't have to read a teleprompter. What do you need glasses for?
Yeah, you never know.
The sun was too bright in the woods, you know. Yeah.
And on top of that, so we went from a night scene into a day scene. And so if you're going from the night scene to the day scene, we wanted to come out wearing our glasses because it made sense to come out wearing your glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we wore them. I mean, I didn't have them until I left the fire campground pretty much and went through the gate. That's when I put mine on. But for my buddy, he just wanted to look like a cool cop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, and continuity is a bitch sometimes, because there were a couple scenes that we started realizing that, oh, wait a minute, Caitlin took her jacket off. Now she's walking through the woods with a t-shirt on. Now we've got to go back and reshoot that scene with a jacket on.
That was Glenn. He told me to take it off.
What was that, Frank?
Hey, no, wait a minute. My wife can hear this.
What were you saying, Frank?
The whole jacket off thing started with Kyle, who was the one that got killed when his guts hanging out. I'm not sure, because I had the whole thing written with his character never not having his uniform on. And then we're laying there putting the makeup on for his intestines. And he's like, couldn't we just do this scene with just the t-shirt? I'm like, oh, okay. And then after he's shot out and gone, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Now the dummy I throw over the bridge has got to not have a uniform on. Now what am I going to do? Because I already built it. So it me giving in to the actors doesn't pay off. So, you know, so I just bribe him with jerky.
Yeah.
So did you guys shoot this all in the 2 years in the same location, or did you change locations?
Oh, my gosh. We were everywhere. The best location was the missile silo. That was 2 hours away. We shot some in my backyard, some in Dan's backyard. One, we just drove outside of town a little bit and said, hey, here's a nice open location. Let's go where she was getting the razor back. We just drove down the road and found an open area and shot that.
If I would have pan left a little bit, we would have seen the Pizza Hut.
Yeah. Yep, the Pizza Hut right there. Yeah,
understood. Yeah, the camera sees all.
So, we shot many places, and the bridge is. I'm sorry, the bridge is right outside, behind the main studio, about what, half a mile. Maybe we walked through the woods to the old train trestle there. Uh-huh. So we shot that, and it was walking through the woods. There was no driving there.
Yeah.
Gotcha. It was a good film, I would have to say. And as we start going into, if anyone has any other like thoughts, critiques, criticism, anything like that, you know, now would be the time to get that out. V-Man, would he have to go get his numbers or something? He might be back by the time we're done, but I just
thing I want to bring up that I'm really proud of is when Caitlin comes to the pyramid, when she finds the pyramid, and then she's sleeping. Let's see, wait a minute. I'm trying to think of where it's at now. Oh, she's waiting at the gate, and she's laying down for the evening. Mm-hmm. That scene to me it's all green screen, but it just turned out better than what I expected it to be.
I didn't think it was green screen.
There you go. Because actually, that was two scenes that were shot different times, and then because it took us 2 years to make it, she originally wasn't even going to the gate to lay down and sleep, but we had to readjust the story because of how long it took us to actually finish it. So yeah, the gate and all that was basically a plate that we had shot 2 years before. We had her lay down on the floor in front of a green screen, and then put it together.
Yeah. And we just threw that scene in to have some kind of scene to tie two other scenes together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And I worked quite a bit on that. I mean, you probably don't notice a lot that I put in it, but there's a campfire there. And then there were some lighting effects I put in to make it. And it was a daytime plate.
Yep. Yeah, the plate was daytime. Yeah. The
plate was daytime. And I spent a lot of time trying to manipulate it to make it look like it was nighttime. And then I put the fireplace in to brighten that up. And then I had to put a light halo around the campfire to make it look like it was, you know, really mm-hmm. emitting some kind of light. And then I even had to do some slow motion of her getting up because the scene was too short. And that was actually her just getting up to get out of the scene. I think we'd already cut, if I'm not mistaken. But it's amazing how many things you go back and use that you don't even intend to use, that you say, I've got to have something to finish this thing.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, that scene pops out in my mind. And then doing some of the green screen.
Yeah, that was totally ad-lib from useless tape. Yeah.
Glenn, Dan, Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us tonight to talk about this film. We really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to the next thing that you guys do together. Do you have any thoughts or ideas as to what is your next project going to be, the Jurassic Park one, or is it something else?
Well, the one that,
Dan, you know, film that he directed.
Yeah, the one's in post-production right now is Mother. And I don't know if you know the back history on that episode. It's a joint project between, of course, you know, Warp 66 is part of it. Glenn's part of it. But I met a guy that wrote originally for the animated series of Star Trek, and then when it went on to write two episodes for Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Larry Brody. And I became friends with him when he moved to Mountain Home, Arkansas, to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And he had several synopses of stories that he submitted that didn't get bought through Paramount. And I asked him one day, I said, there's three of these stories that I would like to collaborate with you on, and maybe I could take your story idea and write a script around it. And he wanted me to do the one that was Mother, the one that we're almost finished with now. So that's coming up. Hopefully we'll get it done by the end of the year, but if not, it'll be the first of the year of next year.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing it. And again, thanks mm-hmm. for joining us tonight.
Okay.
All right. You all take care. Looking forward to seeing the next one.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your ears. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us.
resistance is futile.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.